Hello, everyone. I'm Dennis Nance. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
it seems to me you have problems with your PA system down here. And I really, you know, I appreciate you inviting me back to Atlanta. I know so many people here, and I never thought that would happen. But this is kind of like speaking in front of my home group. And the speaker, you know, the list of speakers for this weekend is pretty intimidating. I remember riding the back roads of South Carolina listening to some of your tapes. And I think pretty sure Dave was at my first North Carolina State Conference. I think Dave was the voice of that conference. And that was before I was a paying participant at the conference. Yeah. My sponsor paid for that one. That's how I remember. I want to thank the committee for inviting me. I really appreciate being here. I didn't know who Jerry was. And when Buckwheat walked up, I never knew. I've been knowing Buckwheat for some time. I didn't know his name was Jerry, you know. But when you meet a white guy named Buckwheat, you remember it. You know. That's one of a kind. And Buck, I commented. I saw him dressed well, and I said, "Buckwheat, you're looking good, you know." And then he messed up his suit. I tell you, that's the way life is sometimes. But glad it was him, you know. Mine is rented, you know. Anyway, I don't have anything special. I'm just another drunk with another story. You know, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope, and I guess I'm a little nervous, but that'll ease off after a while. You know, after all that we've been through tonight, I can't do much worse. That's a big deal. But here it goes, you know. You know, I tell you, I was amazed at how good the drive down was, and Libra's with me tonight. She was not with me when the last time I came to this area, but tonight she is. I want you to meet Libra, my very own Al-Anon, you know. If you had all there is to have, if you had the house, the car, the good job, the brand new suit, you need to get your Al-Anon. That's guaranteed. It ain't complete until you do. I'm a country boy. You know, I was born up in Cleveland County, North Carolina, and I've kind of worked my way down south to Easley. So I bring tidings to you from the traditional group of Alcoholics Anonymous in Greenville, South Carolina. It's taken me 3 years to be able to say Greenville without the S, because I lived in Greensboro for so long. And my sobriety date is February 1st of 1981. And there is no way I would have believed that life would someday be the way it is tonight. When I first met Dave, when I first met a lot of you, when I began to attend meetings in Greensboro, I had no idea that life could be this good for Dennis Nance. I believed that it could happen to you, but I didn't believe it could happen to me. I believe that I am truly blessed tonight. You'll find that I have a lot of opinions, and it's difficult for me to share my experience, strength, and hope without sharing my opinions, but I'll try to separate those. I'll try to share my experience, strength, and hope. But, you know, you guys knew I had some opinions when y'all invited me to speak down here, I guess. And because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, everybody seemed to have an opinion, and I'd raise my hand to talk, and they'd say, "You ain't got an opinion." They told me I couldn't have an opinion until I had read the big book, attended some meetings, and had some sobriety under my belt. I didn't know what that meant. But I've learned since then that if you're sober, and you're black, and you're 6'4", and you weigh 259 pounds, you can have an opinion if you want to. You know? You might not get invited back, but you can have an opinion. And But I am blessed to have gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I know there are a lot of other ways to get sober. As a matter of fact, I tried some of them. That's why I'm here tonight. That's why a whole bunch of y'all are here tonight. But when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I met these old guys that I didn't like. Didn't think they liked me. And all they did was sit around and look serene. Seemed to be enjoying life. And they sat on the back row of the meetings. Some of them wore bib overalls. All of them had one-syllable names, like Bob and Bill and John. Had a couple of them had nicknames like Stick and Slick. Man, these guys just can't remember their name. Must be in bad shape. And they sit back there in that, against the wall in that old halfway house furniture. You know, you sit down in it and you sink down about 2 more feet. And these guys had been sober so long that they had been sitting against that wall and they had little brown grease spots where they had sat. You know. And they'd sit back there, and I was convinced back then that these guys, while I wasn't working there all day, I figured they were at home thinking up smart stuff to say to hurt my feelings when I came to the meeting. That's what they did. They hurt my feelings a lot, saying stuff like, boy, if this program ain't working around your kitchen table, it ain't working around this AA table either. Man, I hated that. They'd say that stuff my daddy say. They'd just say it. And it didn't bother me. It wouldn't bother me, except it was the truth. That's what bothered me about it. And these guys, you know, the meeting would start like it did tonight. And they'd begin to read the tools. And one by one, I'd sit there and watch these guys start nodding out. They couldn't stay awake for a whole AA meeting. They'd start nodding out. And by the time they read the tools, some of them were just flat out snoring, you know. And they'd pretend they'd appear to be asleep until I said something dumb. Then they'd wake up. Start asking me those questions like my daddy asked you. Who told you that? Nobody told me that. I just knew smart stuff when I got here. I was smart. Knew stuff. Then they asked me and say, where'd you find that in the big book? I ain't even have a big book. You don't need a big book when you're smart like me. And then if you couldn't get the right answers to those first two questions, they'd ask you that third question. Who's your sponsor? What do you need a sponsor for unless you plan to follow the instructions? I never wanted to follow the instructions. What do I need a sponsor for? And these guys didn't have too much to do with you until it looked like you wanted to stay sober. And they'd have little committee meetings on you. They'd invite you to them, talk to you right there in front of you, talk about you right there in front of you. Had a little meeting on me one night. They had appointed a spokesman. A.D. A.D., I think that guy's fingers was 18 inches long, man. He'd shake them up. Came to me and said, boy, we've diagnosed your problem. Said, that's right. I knew it was different, see. Vietnam veteran, 8 years in service, married, black. I knew it was different. So I didn't have the same kind of alcoholism they had. But A.D. said, boy, we've diagnosed your problem. And I was waiting for him to tell me how different I was. And he said, you seem to be suffering from malnutrition between ears. He said, yeah. Told me I needed some soul food. I didn't know what he was talking about. And then he went into this long lecture. You know, and I wasn't too sharp back then. I didn't go to treatment, so I didn't get to taper off alcohol on more alcohol or Librium, any of those pretty little pills. So it'd take me a little while to figure things out, you know. So I thought about that for about 2 weeks, and I said, I believe that guy called me stupid. I told my partner, I said, I believe A.D. called me stupid. He said, Dennis, he did call you stupid. He said, well, that was 2 weeks ago. I said, well, I just now figured it out. You know. Takes a little time sometimes. Takes a little time. But I realize now that A.D. could see what I couldn't see. What A.D. was saying to me is, I was on that merry-go-round. And I couldn't see I was on that merry-go-round. See, I'd reached a point in my illness where the only thing I thought would solve my problem was another bottle of the problem. The only thing I thought I could feel good is by taking the very thing that made me feel bad. And that's what A.D. was saying to me. And these old guys outlined a program of action for me that night. They wanted me to go to 5 meetings a week because I worked third shift and had a family. There wasn't a lot of daytime meetings around me. But see, back then they didn't tell you don't drink and go to meetings. They told me not to drink and told me exactly what meetings to go to. And then they showed up at them, sleeping on the back row of that meeting too, you know. And they insisted that I go to speaker meetings. And one night a week, they let me go to a discussion meeting. Man, I was proud. A meeting where I could talk. But they said, don't you say anything. Man, I tell you. Said, we don't want anybody to know you know us yet. I am so grateful for that. The thing I needed the most back then was to be able to listen to you share and be able to identify with the condition that you described. See, because until I accept the fact that I have the problem, I don't need the solution. I need so much today to listen. I don't go to a lot of discussion meetings unless they're on the book or the steps. That's just my program. Well, I started doing this. When I started doing this, I started going to meetings. And the miracle began to unfold. I began to learn some things about Dennis, or relearn some things about Dennis. The first thing that I knew, first thing that I learned, is that I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I didn't like that, but I knew that. And I knew that because I had drank like you drank. I had felt like you had felt. I had thought like you thought. I had behaved like you behaved. I knew that was where I belonged. And I came to the same conclusion those old guys came to. You know, they had another thing they told me during that first talk. They told me, said, now, and I was telling them about my problem being alcohol and all that stuff, and they said, well, Dennis, I said, now, we understand you're alcoholic. But they said, you know, it's our belief that the illness is in you. It's not in the liquor store. It's not in the liquor house. It's not in the bag or the bottle. That your illness is in you. You know, I've come to that same conclusion. Because, see, it ain't like alcohol jumps on me when I go to use the bathroom at night and trips me and crawls up my back and gets me drunk. Or it ain't like I'm backing out of my driveway in the morning, it's hiding in the back seat, jumps on me, chokes me, and gets me drunk. Every time I've gotten drunk, I've gone and got it. So it's something in Dennis. So I've had to work with that as I begin to go to these meetings. I begin to learn or relearn something about myself. Like I said, I was born in Cleveland County, North Carolina. I'm a country boy. I used to tell people I was born in Shelby. I was born a good 6 miles out of Shelby. I feel more comfortable about that because they moved the city limit about 3 times now. It's within 5 miles of where I used to live. But I was born in a good Christian home. Now, and I had a lot of fun during my childhood. I stayed in trouble most of the time. And that was the days before child abuse. I tell people the truth. I was raised on the 3 B's. I was raised on beans, the Bible, and beatings. And I got a whole bunch of them. And Daddy was superintendent of Sunday school. That's bad when Daddy's superintendent of Sunday school. That means you not only got to go, but your parent got to carry you. And I'll tell you, Sunday school was my breeding ground. That's where I perfected the character defects that would keep me consumed by my illness for years. I learned how to memorize stuff. Oh, yeah, I could memorize those Bible verses, those Bible lessons. And, you know, as I began to get older, you know, I found out that I had this, I don't know whether it's a God-given ability or not, but I tell you what, I have the natural ability to lie. I've never had to even think about it. I mean, I can lie on demand. Zoom. It's just like a Subaru. You know, you don't have to change it to four-wheel drive. It's already there. You know. And that's the way my lying was. It just came when it was needed, you know. And you mix a little bit of that memory with that line, it just roll out, and they say, Elder, you've got a fine son. I say, tell him again, you know, tell him again. You know, he don't believe you. And, you know, then I learned how to manipulate people. I learned how to act like they wanted me to act and do what they wanted me to do until they quit looking. And then I did what I wanted to do. And see, those two character defects kept me consumed by, as a matter of fact, they're the worst two character defects I have today. See, because it didn't take me that long to memorize parts of the big book, parts of the 12 and 12. Sound real impressive in discussion meetings. Then I come in the door after some time and say, well, Dennis, how you doing? I know I'm just consumed with something I'm trying to work out, kid problems or job problems or marriage problems or whatever. And I'll say, I'm doing just fine. Just ease on to my seat and, you know, nobody bothers me. But, you know, you hear how it works read. You hear it read all the time. You know, it doesn't say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly memorized our book. It says, follow the path. And see, that's my problem. I just have no desire to follow instructions. I've had to learn that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I began to go to school. I had problems right off the bat. First, I had these two sisters who got skipped through school, got skipped a grade apiece. One of them was skipped two and then put back one. And I'm sitting between them, doing absolutely nothing, expecting to get skipped any time, you know. So I didn't just get lazy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't start doing nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been doing nothing all my life. I like doing nothing, you know. But, you know, you don't make a lot of progress doing nothing. You know, weightlifters don't get big muscles lifting light weights. People don't, I don't know what about you, but I didn't start getting sober. I didn't make a lot of progress until I began to do what I could to follow instructions and work this program. Another one of the opinions Dennis Nance has is that I don't believe that I can get what the big book suggests I get on page 83 and 84 unless I do what the big book suggests I do in the fifth chapter. That's just the way it's always worked for me. And I didn't figure that out in high school. I figured it out in Alcoholics Anonymous. Another thing I like about Shelby is we were growing up, everybody was just poor. Now, had I known how poor we were, I'd be in a mental institution today. I'd still be feeling sorry for myself. I didn't know we were that poor. We were so poor that we missed the whole civil rights movement, you know. You know, we didn't know white folk and black folk to hate each other until we were in high school. You know? We picking cotton in the same cotton field, riding to the store in the same pickup truck, sneaking off and playing in the same yard, and on Sunday afternoon, had an old musket iron tree behind Jack Hammack's. And man, you find white kids, black kids, it was like the tree was growing kids, all in the same musket iron tree. And then integration came along, and all that changed. I began to feel even more different. Even more different. And see, as I was coming up, there were a lot of things different about me. The first thing is I had all those girls around. And that confused me, you know. I had five sisters and one brother, and these girls just did all kind of stuff. They painted their fingernails, they wore dresses, they did all kind of stuff, you know, and I didn't get to participate in that. And I'm standing there looking, I said, well, Dennis, you know, girls don't paint their fingernails, or boys don't paint their fingernails. I said, well, I understand that. I said, they paint their thumbnail. Do it to me, you know. And I'm the only little kid, the only little boy with red fingernails in Sunday school, you know. And then I started wearing glasses when I was 5 years old. Felt bad about that. I just assumed that I was ugly and stupid and dumb. Felt like I had to do something special to be your friend. Just ashamed of those glasses. Old welfare glasses. The hinges never tightened up on them, you know. And still couldn't see. I was looking over one and under the other one. And then Dad was too cheap to get a real haircut. Dad would give me those old bootleg haircuts at home, you know, with the Sears and Roebuck clippers, you know. I was in the Army before I knew haircuts didn't have to hurt, you know. He had been pulling my hair out all that time and just never could get that hair right. So here I've got a crooked haircut and crooked glasses, you know. And then you go to school and the teacher would say, oh, he's special, you know. And then later on I learned what special education is, you know. Folks thought I was stupid. But in the eighth grade, In eighth grade, things began to happen for me. I began to know that I was consumed with me. I began to know that I was self-conscious, and I just felt different. And we had this end-of-school party. That was our last year in an integrated school, in a segregated school. And the next year, we were going to mandatory integration. And we had a farewell party. And I learned that I was different from even other black people. See, the first thing I learned is that I couldn't dance like these other guys. I mean, they were cool. They just floated across the floor. And see, I didn't even know what kind of music they were listening. They listened to stuff like Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, the Supremes, Gladys Knight, the Temptations. I'd been laying in the bathtub on Saturday night listening to a country western station out of Gaffney, you know. I'd been listening to Buck and the Buckaroos and Conway Twitty and the Twitty Birds and Merle Haggard and the Strangers. And, you know, it felt like that sounded like a group I might fit in with, you know. Yeah. And I didn't know a soul brother supposed to listen to soul music. And then these guys from Holyoke Park had cool walks. All the black guys had cool walks. I think something happens to us about age 13. One of our knees, something happens on our knees. We dip a little bit when we walk. You know? I didn't do that. I didn't have a cool walk. So I've been pulling that cotton sack for 13 years, and it kind of took the dip out of my hip. I'm 13 years old, and I'm black, and I ain't cool. And I'm a soul brother, and I don't have soul. But that summer, I found it. It was in my wife's grandfather's corn crib in a little brown box. Me and old Cale ran up on it by mistake. We'd been playing basketball. We needed to cool off and rest. And laid up in that corn crib and found a bottle of liquid corn. Oh, yes, indeed. And we sat out there and we talked about that. We knew enough about the democratic process that we knew we just couldn't drink Grandpa's liquor. That thing was imported, so we voted on it. And the majority ruled. And we drank Grandpa's liquor. And right after we drunk Grandpa's liquor, I got that burning sensation in my stomach. Went all the way down to my kneecaps. You know, I could feel that haircut just straighten right up. I tell you. I told Kale, I said, Kale, now I don't think I need these glasses anymore, because I think... I think I got that 20/20 vision y'all talking about. I'm seeing to everything. We went down and hid up under plum bushes between the church and the house. We talked about what we'd do to those Brentley girls if they came over that hill. And they didn't come over the hill, and we didn't get to do it. So we went back up the hill. And we knew, you know, we had to get something back in that bottle that looked like alcohol. You know, we did. We urinated back in the bottle and hid it back where we found it. I don't guess we wanted to keep Grandpa's liquor. We just wanted to use it. You know, we gave it back to him. Never got caught for that. My next encounter with alcohol, I was going to make some myself. I don't know where my bright ideas come from. They just happen, you know. I've never had a heart attack or anything like that, but I've had brain attacks. And right after I have them, I end up drunk. So I had a brain attack. Go make me some wine. And I got some bears out of the backyard. We moved off the farm then. I terrorized those girls and scared them. And they boiled me up some juice, whatever that was, and poured it in two mason jars. And in my head, it was supposed to ferment. Now, I didn't know how it was supposed to ferment, but I knew it would not do it in the daylight. It had to be dark. So I dug a hole in the backyard, buried that stuff. Darkest place I know. And went and sat on the back porch for about 5 minutes. It was ready now. Went out there and drank one of them. Took a long time to drink a quart. But nothing happened. I guess it was the next day sometime I drank that up. But see, I spent all that night trying to figure out how that alcohol got in. So you know what I did? I poured a little rubbing alcohol in the next one and drank it. Now, that didn't produce a high. It produced the worst case of gas I ever had in my life. You know? But you know, I tell you, if you're an old country boy from Shelby, you know, having gas ain't a bad deal, you know. Entertainment's entertainment. I don't remember a whole lot of my high school years. I used to think I'd been cheated out of a lot of years. My alcoholism progressed rapidly. I remember making, as a freshman, making the varsity cut at Crest High School, playing basketball. I drank myself out of that basketball program in less than 2 years. Drank myself off a school bus route in a year and 19 days. In high school, I dropped from a college preparatory track to a vocational track to a general track and barely slid out of high school, laying out of school, drinking wine, shoplifting, and fast talking to teachers in the past. And that was a period where teachers were concerned enough about the individual and knew the family well enough that they knew what you were capable of. I don't know what looks so attractive to me about drinking wine, but that's what I am. I'm a certified, bona fide whiner. Contrary to most people, I like hearing a good wine old drunkalogue every now and then. I mean, I've been so consumed with a good wine old talk, I just get up and put my hand over my heart. I tell you, it's like hearing the Star Spangled Banner play. I tell you, it makes me feel patriotic. But now, the first time I was confronted with my drinking was in high school. The first person that confronted me with my drinking was Lois Sauls, my English teacher. She said, "Dennis, I think you have a drinking problem." Pulled out the old black book and showed me my attendance record. Told me that I was smelling like alcohol just then, right then. Now, I couldn't smell it, but she could. You know. Showed me my schoolwork. She had taught me 3 or 4 years of high school English. But you know what the teachers know? You take one drink, they catch you one time, and they think you're alcoholic. The next 3 people to confront me with my alcoholism were classmates. They were 17 years old, just like me. The first one was Sylvia Spears, a minister's daughter. She just said straight out, "Dennis, I think you're alcoholic." And that hurt my feelings. I had never been hurt like that before. I said, "Well, Sylvia, this means you're not going to do my history homework anymore?" She said, "No, I'm going to do it," and I graduated. Then there was Linda Lowe. Linda Lowe was a nice, dainty, long-haired, beautiful lady. She just looked like nun material. She's too beautiful. I was scared to get close to her. I thought I might get her dirty, you know? She wrote a manual, "Dennis, you're a nice guy. Stay off the booze and everything will be okay." But the last one, the one that got my attention, the one that baffled me, was Janice Morgan. She wrote in my email, "Dennis, someday reality will hit you in the face and you won't know what to do." That's pretty heavy stuff for 17 years old. But I know what that reality is today. That reality is accepting my alcoholism and living according to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, one day at a time. That's my reality there. I don't know what Judge Morgan knew, but they knew something that I didn't know. Because, see, I drank for 10 more years after. It's almost as if, you know, alcoholism is like having body odor. When the guy that's stinking finds out he's stinking, everybody around him has known for a long time, you know. Been trying to tell. I was mad at everybody back then, just angry. I got mad and left and went in the Army, you know. I heard Mom had told me many times that, "Dennis, you'll never be able to join the Army because your eyes are too bad." And I was mad at my parents because they wanted to give me the things that any responsible parent would want to give their children. They wanted me to get an education. They wanted me to go to church and improve my spiritual life. They wanted me to treat Libra like the beautiful woman that she is. I couldn't do that. So I got mad and joined the Army. And I was proud to tell them, too. I'll tell you, I was glad to get them back. I joined the Army and came home, and Daddy's sitting on the front porch with his overalls on, smoking my cigarettes. I said, "Dad, I joined the Army." He said, "That's good. You ain't doing nothing else. Go tell your mama." I mean, he couldn't even hurt the guy's feelings. You know? Couldn't even hurt his feelings, you know. So I told Mom. I knew Mom was going to go crazy. You know? So Mama joined the Army. "Dennis, no, you didn't." "Yes, I did." I handed her that paper. She started crying and hollering and rolling all over her bed. I got her back, teaching to mess with me. Yes, indeed. 2 weeks later, I was down at Fort Jackson crying and hollering and rolling all over my bed. That's a bad shit. You know. I am convinced that the Army is one of God's tools of taking care of Dennis Nance. I stayed in the Army 8 years. I got back from Vietnam on my 19th birthday and married Libra 10 days later. We already had a son. We went out to Oklahoma and started doing unknowingly what alcoholic families do. Fuss and fight and yell and scream and chase that paycheck and do without money. I'll tell you what, I learned how to diagnose alcoholism. Go to the gas pump and watch the people that put $2 worth of gas in that car. That's alcoholic. That's me. That's me. And we left Oklahoma, went to Germany for 3.5 years, about 40 months, then came back that last two. Over that time, I accumulated 5 DWIs. Over that time, I was assessed by a professional alcoholism counselor in Germany that suggested I go to an inpatient treatment program at Nuremberg General Hospital in Nuremberg, Germany. There was only one problem. I outranked the counselor, so I didn't go. The other problem was, I was a nuclear weapons artillery gun chief. And if you're in nuclear weapons, you can't be alcoholic. My next assignment, my last assignment, was as a drill sergeant. You're a drill sergeant. You can't be alcoholic. But I refused to go to treatment. Came back to the States and proceeded to drink myself out of the Army. Not a bad discharge. Just a series of irrational decisions. 24 months later. Well, we got back from Germany on June 6th of 1977. Didn't know anybody anything. Came back home. 24 months later, we are financially bankrupt. House, we got the cars, all that stuff. And they plan on sending me to Korea. My drinking is out of control. Libra is saying, I want to get rid of this guy. And the Army is saying, let's send him to Korea and put him on ice for a while. Let's forget about him. You know, drunks know when you're trying to get rid of them. I didn't do either one. I don't cooperate with people who try to get rid of me. So we prepared to get out of the Army. Well, Libra was leaving me. I thought I was getting out of the Army. She's getting out of the Army, getting out of the marriage, getting out of everything, you know. So we carried her home, her car, and I went back out to Oklahoma. I like it out in Oklahoma. This last 45 days I had to do in the Army was beautiful because Libra and those kids were gone, and I could drink like I wanted to drink. I could drink with authority. Except that when I drink like I want to drink, I end up with people I don't know in places I've never been. A kind gentleman kept that house from going into foreclosure, and I salvaged, I think, $4,100 out of a $21,000 house. Sent Libra $1,300 of that money and woke up in the edge of a wheat field in Hobart, Oklahoma, driving that car around in that wheat field as best I could. And at that time, I didn't understand blackouts. That's the first recognizable blackout that I'd had. I didn't know where that money went. Still don't know where that money went. And Libra and I didn't understand blackouts. We didn't understand alcoholism. That was the basis for many an argument in my family until we had made some progress in AA and Al-Anon. I came back to Oklahoma like a good drunk's supposed to, drinking wine and writing bad checks. I hated to write some of those checks. That's the only way I knew to get some wine. And I got to North Carolina. Libra wanted to know where the money was. I can't tell her. And she said, that's okay, I'm leaving. I got a house in Greensboro. She moved to Greensboro. And I did the most logical thing. I got another car and followed her. So I moved in behind her. Libra got a job that Monday morning. I applied for one job a day, and if I was not hired on the spot, my next stop was the liquor store on Church Street. I was a businessman. I didn't have time to be messing around, you know. I had skills, you know. And eventually I was hired at a local prison unit. And at this prison unit, I began to see some of me. My life changed at that prison unit. First thing that happened in 1980, I was invited home for a Thanksgiving dinner. And we had never been to a Thanksgiving dinner since we had left home. And unknowingly, I knew that my mother and my sisters were concerned about my drinking. I knew they were sneaking around talking about me. I knew Libra was telling it. And Somebody asked me about going to church or something about my drinking, and I did what I did best. I created a lot of confusion, started an argument, and if you're going to win those arguments, you got to walk out. And I walked out. And I woke up out of what I know would be my second recognizable blackout, headed north on 85, somewhere between Charlotte and Kannapolis. And I had that night what I believe to be that moment of clarity that I hear a lot of other people talk about. It occurred to me that night. Here I am running 15 miles per hour on the interstate, driving out of one eye, can't stay awake. Something's wrong with me. Maybe I am an alcoholic. Because, see, what occurred to me that night is that we had got a letter in Germany informing us that Libra's uncle, Big Dan W., who was the town drunk when we were growing up, had gotten sober in this strange thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody knew what it was. Now, I figured, you know, if they've got him, it's just a matter of time before they catch me. I thought you guys out there hunting for people. I thought they were hiding out behind the liquor store, trying to catch a man walking out with a couple of fists, you know. Or sitting outside 7-Eleven, saying, "Look here, man, what you doing with that beer?" You know? But I didn't know. You couldn't find out where these people were. Didn't know how they caught him. But I said, "Now, when I get back to Greensboro, I'm going to call Dan and see what happened to him." But I got back to Greensboro, and I said, "Well, I can quit on my own. I don't need to talk to Dan." One of the first miracles happened in my life. Dan called me. Said he was in a place nearby. And Dan came in. Came by. I cooked Sunday dinner, as best a drunk can. Head hurting. Dan parked in my driveway, and I went out to check my car. Like, I used to check my car, see if it hit anything. And I noticed that in the back of Dan's car, he had a big faded out book. You barely could make out Alcoholics Anonymous on it. Had white spots on it, probably coffee and cream, you know. And I tried to steal Dan's book. I was going to get in his car and steal his book. Because I couldn't ask for help. I had trouble asking for help. I couldn't say, "I don't know. Please help me." And after I couldn't get in his car, I just went in and asked Dan. I said, "Dan, tell me about this thing called alcoholism." And man, I tell you, did he tell me. Dan talked and talked and kept on talking. And finally Dan said, "Dennis, if I dial a number, will you ask for help? Will you talk?" I said, "Dan, if you just shut up, I'll talk." And the guy on the other end of the phone, named James, asked me to be in his office at 9 o'clock Monday morning. I went down there. And James shared, like I'm similar to what I shared with you about his alcoholism. He gave me a little test. I passed his little test. James was strange. James was a black guy. He was neatly groomed, had a short haircut, had on gray pants, tan shoes. His socks and his pants matched. My socks and my pants hadn't matched in years. That was amazing. Had starch in his car. I didn't hang around people who looked like that. I thought maybe this guy was an undercover agent for the local sheriff or something. I wouldn't tell him anything. I couldn't wait to get out of there. And on my way out, he said, "Wait a minute, Dennis, if you're going to stay sober, you're going to need this." And he had one of those big blue books, brand new, still had the cover on it. And that's what I wanted, so I could go home and lay across my bed and work this program. And I had to come to these meetings like you poor people did. I wasn't that bad yet. And before I could get my hand on that doorknob, little Rosalie said, "James, are you going to ask him?" I said, "Oh, man, they want some money now." You know, I didn't have a $120 bill left. So I started reaching in my pocket. You know what he asked me? Asked me with my wife and kids to come to counseling. Man, I tell you, I didn't want them to. I said, "Man, they done messed up my drinking. Now they're going to mess up my not drinking." And see, I thought Libra might be okay. But I was really concerned about my kids. They had like 7 and 9. You know, kids that age, you have to be careful. Because if you're not careful about kids that age, they'll tell the truth on you, you know. You're drinking like I'm drinking. You don't want people telling the truth about what's going on in your house. Libra came in for a couple of counseling sessions, put right into Al-Anon. Terrible thing. Things changed around the house. She'd say stuff like, "Dennis, I'm going to an Al-Anon meeting. If you're going to a meeting tonight, you make arrangements for the kids, or you can take them with you. It's about time you did that. You're their father. Just leave. We need to argue about it. When she take that big long pony, I'm going to have to drive that Volkswagen with the brown nose on it out right three times drunk, you know. And then she'd come in a little later. Well, Dennis, I'm going to the Bonnie Doon retreat. I said, what is that? She said, it's a retreat for Al-Anon. I said, Libra, how much does that cost? She said, it costs $80 for the whole weekend. I said, Libra, we can't afford that. She said, I can't afford not to. Left. No argument. No argument, no nothing. I tell you, things changing around the house, you know. So I start grudgingly going to meetings. I like those meetings arranged like this, where the coffee pot and the door were in the same place. I'd get just inside that door, sit down, eat up your donuts, drink your coffee, sit there miserably. And between A and me and the Lord's Prayer, magic happened. A 6-foot-4 black man disappeared. Boom, I'm gone. I don't want you hugging on me talking about keep coming back. We love you. I didn't want to be there in the first place. And I did that for about 81 days. Easiest time I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. I begin to feel kind of sorry for you guys. Y'all palace over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. I said, what a shame. They can't drink liquor. My problem is I ain't got money. See, if I had money, I'd drink some liquor. See, I filed bankruptcy about July 5th of 1981. So my first 21 months in the program, my wages were gone. So I know it don't take money to stay sober. As a matter of fact, if I'd have had money, I probably wouldn't be sober. Step two offended me. I could not see how I needed to be restored to something that I had not lost. I said, who's insane? Not me. See, I forgot about coming home drunk, sleeping in the backyard, because I can't get the key in the door. Saturday morning, Michelle's on top of her dresser. Mom and Dad's sleeping in the backyard again. She said, well, let them stay out there. You know, they get so insensitive after they start going out and on. And I get mad and go in. And Libra's standing there with that old blue gown on with the lace coming off of it, saying, ask you the perfect Al-Anon question. Dennis, why are you sleeping in the backyard again? I give it a perfect drunk answer. Everybody's sleeping in the backyard sometime. Woman, leave me alone. But not one time I ever looked over my neighbor's backyard and see him. How you doing, George? How'd you sleep last night? See, but I ain't insane. I ain't insane. No, not me. I'm not insane. I skipped step three because, you know, it's got God in it and I ain't ready to deal with it. Because God just cut me a bad deal. You know, just cut me, won't do me right. And you guys I heard some stuff about a fourth step, kind of like inventory, a novel on yourself. I thought maybe I could do that. I don't know about you, but I knew a whole lot more about that fourth step than I did the first when I got here. So I had to start where I understood. Lady named Margaret, cute little lady named Margaret, insisted that I get a sponsor. And I had trouble finding a sponsor. I couldn't find anybody black enough, couldn't find anybody cool enough. Couldn't find anybody that was a Vietnam veteran. Couldn't find anybody that was married. People just couldn't find anybody intellectual enough to. You know what I had to do? I had to sponsor myself. Easiest time I've ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, when you sponsor yourself, you ain't got to make coffee. You ain't got to read the big book. You ain't got to go to meetings. You don't have, the answer machine is empty when you get home. Nobody calls you in the morning saying, Dennis, how you doing? Have you done your prayer and meditation yet? Well, you might want to do that, and you have a nice day. See, when you're sponsoring yourself, life is good. Life is good. And I sponsored myself for 81 days. Had a good time. Best time I ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. Easy. You don't grow a lot doing easy stuff. I was in the east side of Alcoholics Anonymous in Greensboro. I had another brain attack. Brain told me, he said, Dennis, there might be some other things you can use since you can't use alcohol. I said, yeah, you're right. I spelled some of them. They didn't start with A's either. I said, well, this is AA. This ain't MA. Yeah. That's a big decision for a drunk like me. I said, well, I better ask my sponsor about that. That's the thing about sponsoring yourself. He's on demand. He's right there when you need him. Me and my sponsor ended up 140 miles away from home, drunk and half naked. Just me and my sponsor. On February 1st of 1981, I did the only thing I've probably done right in Alcoholics Anonymous. Came back. Those old guys with the grease spot gang back there. They said, "Boy, we've been waiting on you." Boy, I hated to hear that. And they had a little meeting with me after the meeting. And old James again asked me, said, "Boy, did you ask God to keep you sober the day that you drank?" I told the truth that night for the first time in a long time. I said no. It's amazing. I've thought about that episode in my life a lot. You know, it doesn't take, usually the truth can be told in one or two words. When I start explaining, you can bet I'm lying and rationalizing. I just said no. He said, "Well, how do you expect to stay sober if you don't use this program to people in it, a power greater than yourself?" And he talked to me in a language that I understood. See, when they ain't got your insurance money, your mom and daddy's money, your employer's money, they can talk to you in a language that you understood. And he did. I went home that night with the basis of my recovery. I knew that night as well as I know today that Dennis Nance can't keep Dennis Nance sober. I knew that Dennis Nance can't replace his alcohol with any other mood-altering chemical. I knew that Dennis Nance was going to have to affect some type of relationship with God as he understood him or as he misunderstood him. It was going to have to happen. And I knew that Dennis Nance was going to have to get a sponsor, someone that was reasonably successful to stand sober 24 hours at a time, and Dennis Nance was going to have to follow instructions. That night, and every night since, I have used prayer and meditation. The next morning, and every morning since, I start my day with a period of prayer and meditation. They gave me a sponsor, old Crazy Ivory. He was unemployed, unemployable, lived with his mama, been married twice and divorced twice, last drunk was on wintergreen alcohol. I told him, "Man, that guy's crazy." They said, "Well, you crazy, that's why you got him." Man, I'll tell you, put me on the road with that guy. We was in Durham, and Raleigh, and Winston-Salem, and Ashbury. No tell, we drove as far as Oxford on a Sunday afternoon to be in a meeting at 8 o'clock. Filled up my sun visor with that AA literature. Wouldn't let me complain about leaving the kids. Man, I tell you, he insisted that I work these steps. He insisted that I give what he could. I didn't have money, but I had a car. And they'd fill that car up, and we'd hit the old Lincoln Street in Durham. I could make coffee. I could chair meetings. They had me doing what I could. And he worked with me through the third step, and he switched me over to Lou H. Lou was a kind man. Lou worked with me from my fourth step through my ninth step. And Lou would just listen to me complain, and he would listen and listen and listen. And it just, you know, he was just a beautiful old man. Didn't seem to be bothered by anything. I learned later on, Lou couldn't hear good. He didn't even know what I was saying. But after that, they sent me to AD. And AD insisted that I start from step one. And AD did one of the most loving things I think that's ever been done to me. AD taught me what he knew of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. He insisted that I work the steps. AD sat in that recliner and showed me how he began his day with prayer and meditation, how he ended his day with prayer and meditation. And for a good old Baptist boy like me, that's strange. I've been told to pray all my life, but it was in Alcoholics Anonymous that I was shown how to pray. I had spent my whole life looking for God in resounding voices, in the bottle of a liquor bottle, in burning bushes, in lightning bolts. And God came to me in the most effective way God can come to me, in the form of a recovering alcoholic bearing the message of hope. AD gave me a lot of charges. He insisted that I learn what I could of the book. And he said, "Boy, if you stay sober, you're going to sponsor other people. And if you sponsor those people and don't teach them the importance of working the steps, if you don't teach them what you have learned of the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't sponsor these people like you were sponsored, He said, you may be cheating them out of the only chance they'll ever have at recovery. And if you can't give them what you were given, you get them to somebody who can. Man, that's heavy stuff. Life began to change. The kids grew up. Instead of two nail-biting discipline problems, they finished school. They're two pretty, you know, they, and I don't take any credit for that. I think it's their exposure to Alateen that done that. I'm positively sure that Libra is who she is and what she is today because of the program of Al-Anon. I believe that together the program of Al-Anon, Alateen, and Alcoholics Anonymous do together for families what the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous do for the alcoholic. They rebuild the heart and mind of the injured person from the inside out. And man, that's a beautiful process. Well, Michelle called last night. She's getting ready to fire her most recent boyfriend. Yeah, she seems to be good at that. Well, Dennis has recently gone through divorce. He has three beautiful daughters. The boy is very fertile. Stay away from him if you know him. But those granddaughters, you know, they take those little Cheer America. They got their little uniforms, and they do little cheers for me. And I sit there, and I'm their audience, one-man audience, you know. They do their little cheers, and I sit there, and I say them the wrong way, you know. And their mother still chews me out about teaching them stuff that they don't need to know, you know. I forget some of the stuff that I teach them, but, you know, they just learn. All the songs they don't need to learn, I teach them those things. Let them drive my lawn tractor. I woke up one night and the youngest one was laying on my chest. She's left-handed with a chin. What are you doing, girl? Papa, I like you. I mean, that's worth staying sober for. I learned so much from them. I went to church. The last time I went to church with them, Naomi likes to sit on my left side. Naomi's kind of like her grandpa. She don't pay attention too good. Don't like to sit down. So the preacher's preaching, and Naomi's crawling through my legs, playing with my ink pen, pulling on my tie. And all of a sudden, you know, in the Baptist church, Black Baptist church, we're a little charismatic. The preacher speaks with authority. And as he began to reach the climax of his sermon, Naomi stopped and started listening. And she said, Papa, is God coming today? So, well, Naomi, I don't think so. She started right back playing, you know. The girl knows how to live a day at a time. You know, so it's amazing that they do naturally what I've had to come to Alcoholics Anonymous to do. Libra's the love of my life. I never expected to be married 27 years. You know, I used to tell her, Libra. She said, Dennis, I don't think we're going to make it. I think we're going to get divorced. And I said, well, Libra, I won't divorce you until we've been married sober as long as we were married drunk. So that might happen any time. You know? All the opportunities I passed up drinking have come back. I'm enjoying being a grandfather. I'm enjoying being gainfully employed. One of the things that I passed up was my education. It's one of the things that I drank up. But I'm positively sure that all the things, that anything I give up to get sober, God will give me back if I intend to have it. And I was able to go back to school and complete a degree in psychology and go ahead and as a matter of fact, I just completed a master's. I'm hoping the degree will come in the mail next week. Now I don't know what everybody else don't know. You know? So, anyway, okay. But I look back over my life and I'm so grateful for meeting you. I believe that everything that happened before Alcoholics Anonymous was God's way of preparing me for my encounter with you. I think back to those days in Sunday school. The things I thought I didn't learn anything. I think back to those early days of Alcoholics Anonymous when I felt so sorry for me. And I used to ask all those questions. Why have I got to go to meetings? Why can't I drink wine? Why have I got to chair meetings? Why have I got to work these steps? Other people's sponsors don't seem to make them do it. I'm a chronic complainer. That's why I need to be in Marietta, Georgia tonight. You see, I spent a lot of my life sitting right in the middle of the solution, complaining about the problem. I think about other people that have terminal illnesses like cancer, diabetes, AIDS, brain tumors, liver disorders. If all they had to do was live a day at a time, follow instructions, work 12 steps, get a sponsor, use their own concept of a higher power, give something back. If that's all they had to do, if all they had to do was the things that AA teaches me to do, you could not find a place big enough to hold them all. And who am I to stand in the middle of the solution and continue to complain about the problem? Thank you so much for inviting me, and may God bless you.